is Truth Be Told, a Sheridan Life radio podcast exploring the complex issues affecting Indigenous communities in Canada. I'm your host, Danielle Orr. Yesterday, I spoke with David Suzuki for Sheridan Life Radio. We talked about his latest documentary on aging well and why Indigenous voices are so important in conversations about aging and climate change. We also talked about the ongoing protests across Canada in support of Wet'suwet'en Hereditary Chiefs against the Coastal GasLink pipeline. David's documentary makes its debut tonight on his show, The Nature of Things, at 9 p.m. on CBC. You'll also be able to find the documentary on CBC Gem. Enjoy! Thank you so much for speaking with us at Sheridan Life Radio today. We really appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
So I'll get right into it. You're promoting your latest documentary called Aging Well, Suzuki Style, which will be on your CBC series, The Nature of Things, tomorrow night. You take the audience on a quest to figure out how you stack up mentally and physically to several tests at 83 years of age and to find out how people can live in a way that increases their longevity. So you rated pretty well on most of your tests in the documentary. What do you personally attribute to aging well?
Well, as I say, I chose my parents very carefully. You know, some of it is the luck of the draw, the genetic draw. But given what your genes dictate, there's a lot you can do to try to maintain your health into old age. And I personally think, I don't know, but I think that the fact that after the war ended, we were shipped out to Ontario and we were completely impoverished. And so as children, we had to go to work. We worked on farms in the beginning, so the money that we raised went to Mom and Dad to take care of us. And we had to work long, hard days. I mean, I remember we'd start working at 7 in the morning. We'd take, at noon, we had half an hour for lunch, and then we'd work till 6 days a week. And, you know, and as a child, I never thought of it as hard work, but we were working along with grown-ups. And then when we moved to London, Ontario, I went into construction and worked in construction 8 years. And I think those years laid down the basic skeletal muscular frame of my body. Now, when I became a scientist, I was sitting at a microscope for hours and hours, 7 days a week, and I got a pot on me. I got fat. And it was only later, I must have been in my mid-30s, and I was in the O'Hare Airport in Chicago, and I had to run from one end to the other to catch a plane to Toronto. And I started to run, and I got halfway there, and I literally was gasping like, I could hardly move, and I missed my plane. And I realized, Suzuki, you are in terrible shape. So I started to work out, and amazingly, as I began to lose some of that fat, there was my body was still there, and my body loved that I was, you know, doing some exercise and working out, and that body has held me up. Even now when I go to the gym, I'm always amazed that, you know, the body, it's now it's finding it hard work, but it's still there and it's still saying, thank you, Suzuki, I need that.
What you're saying is a lifetime of activity or, yep, you know, physical activity for your body.
When I go to the gym, I tell the gym owner, I say, you're my doctor, because exercise is the best medicine there is for old people. Mm. And, you know, this is really serious. Like, there is no drug that can reduce your risk of Alzheimer's, diabetes, heart attack, stroke, a whole list of diseases, not by 2 or 3%, but by 30 to 40%. Mm, so,
wow.
You know, this is really good medicine.
Aside from that, what was the most surprising test result or insight that you got while filming the documentary?
Well, there were a number of things, but one was the scientist in England who started a bicycle club for older people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not just, you know, leisurely biking around the park. They were heavy-duty bicyclists, and he would measure their health. And I was amazed that he could show that the immune system just bounced right back up into a young person's immune system. And, you know, when elders, they fall and break a leg or something and go to the hospital, often it's an infection they get in the hospital that does them in, pneumonia and things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the best way to fight that is a good, strong immune system. And, you know, that heavier exercise was really good for the immune system. The other thing was the report that that we live in terms of happiness in a U shape. That is, on the left side you're in a very happy state because you're a child and you know there's no care in the world because your parents are looking out for you and you're just playing all the time. But then as you get older, you get more responsibilities. You have to go to university. You have to find a job. You have to find a partner. You may buy a house or decide to have a family. These are all wonderful stages in one's life, but they add pressure to your life, you know, so it's not all fun and games. But then as you get older and the family, you know, children grow up and move out and you no longer have to run around worried about getting a raise or a promotion and you're not after money or fame any of the things that you were interested in when you were younger. And that relieves you of all of that that pressure, the weight of responsibility, so that in old age, the curve goes back up again because you're entering a second phase of a much happier time. I never realized that mm-hmm. as an elder, I don't have to worry about a lot of things that I did when I was a younger person. So, in fact, it's a happier time as long as we can maintain our health.
And that's actually quite surprising, I think, probably for most of the audience, because we're kind of given this narrative that, you know, aging is a negative thing.
Exactly.
And that it's not a great experience, right?
Exactly.
So that's really surprising.
And I think there's another thing, that elders are kind of being demonized in a way. I mean, not deliberately, but, you know, you hear the reporter saying, well, there's a large wave of older people coming along. They'll be the largest group, and of course medical bills are going to get greater, and we don't have enough young people to earn money and pay their taxes to support the medical system for the older people. So in a way, we're kind of regarding the elderly as kind of this huge burden on society, and I just think that's wrong, and I think that there is a better model in that if you go to indigenous communities, and, you know, many of these communities have enormous problems of alcohol and youth suicide and diabetes and obesity. And yet in these communities, the elders are like rock stars. You know, I'm always amazed to go to a feast or some celebration, and when the elders come, you know, kids run up, auntie, uncle, and they take their arms, and they get to the best seats in the house, and they always get to open the event with a prayer, and they get, when meals are served, they get the first meal, first dishes come to the elders, and they close the event with a prayer, and elders are valued, respected, honored, because they've lived a lifetime and they've got a lot of knowledge through that experience. And our elders, when they were younger, they had elders that they learned from. So in a way, our elders are a record of, you know, things that have happened in the past. It goes back much longer than just the life of the elder. So elders are really valuable, and we need to hear from them and learn how a lot of things are changing within their lifetimes. And it's not all, oh, isn't that wonderful, look at the latest style of Nike shoes, or you know, the latest iPhone. You know, there's a lot of other changes elders will tell us about to remind us that we're having an impact on the planet.
So I'm going to jump off of that, actually, what you just said. Why is it important for you to bring traditional Indigenous knowledge to the table alongside scientific research for your foundation?
Well, because I think there are a number of answers to that. One is, I think they give us a model for how you treat your elders and how you value the knowledge that elders have. But I think there's a much more profound reason why we should pay attention to Indigenous people. You got to remember, with the great age of exploration 500 years ago, as explorers began to travel around the planet, they didn't they weren't in search of new cultures or knowledge from Indigenous people. They were after resources. So they came to North America and South America, Africa, Australia, and they claimed to have discovered these places when there were people living there for thousands, tens of thousands of years. Mm-hmm. But those early explorers didn't value the Indigenous people. They were a pain in the neck because these explorers wanted to get at the trees and the minerals and the fish and the things to take back to their home countries. But I think the dominant cultures of the colonial mentality now still looks at the world in terms of resources, whereas Indigenous people, they have their roots in the land. And if you go and listen to their songs and their prayers and their dances, they're all about thanking their creator for nature's generosity and abundance. And in thanking their creator, they make a promise that they have a responsibility to care for nature, to ensure that she will continue to be as productive and generous as she has. And that's what we in the dominant society have lost, a sense of reciprocity, that we have a responsibility that goes with taking stuff from Mother Nature. And we've got to learn that. You know, there's a battle going on in northern British Columbia now. Mm-hmm. The Unistoten camp of the Wet'suwet'en people, they're saying this is our land, and our responsibility is to protect that land. And because we've lived here for 10,000 years, and we want our children and grandchildren to be able to live on the land. But we have to be responsible. And that's why you want to put a pipeline through. We don't want that pipeline through here, because that's going through a very special part. And, you know, people are mad at the Wet'suwet'en for all this inconvenience of, you know, that other tribes are showing solidarity mm-hmm. with them. But we're just learning now that the Wet'suwet'en people didn't say no pipeline, period. They said, don't go through this area. It's sacred area, but you can put it down in another part of our territory where there's already a pipeline. And so they're not saying no to pipelines. It's just where it should be done. But the pipeline and oil company are saying, well, it's going to cost more money.
Yeah.
So money, they think, is more important than observing the relationship that they have with the land. And that's the critical issue that I think most Canadians are not hearing or paying attention to.
What do you think of the unprecedented support across Canada these days?
I think it's amazing. I'm delighted with that, because it shows it's not just this one little group of people that are trying to hold their place in the land. They're being supported by all kinds of other Indigenous people as well as non-Indigenous people, because they are understanding this is a battle over the way that we treat the land. And right now we are in a very, very frightening situation, where we know that climate change, there is a very narrow window of opportunity to avoid catastrophic climate change, and we're going through an extinction crisis where up to a million plants and species of plants and animals may go extinct very quickly. And that's what these protests are all about. And this is much more than just one dissident group of people. This is recognized as a critical issue all across this country by many, many other groups. And I take great heart in that. Our politicians and our corporations are not getting it. They don't see what the issue is. We're heading into a real crisis with the environment. And what Indigenous people are saying to us is we've got to learn to treat the land in a different way.
And even on a more minuscule level, like, it's much more than just, you know, a simple inconvenience, like, you know, your train not coming, right? It's such a big problem.
They have tried for decades to get the attention of the government, you know, and it's this group that they had the Delgamuukw decision that recognized that there are inherent rights of traditional cultures, and that was a huge step, but took decades of litigation. And then we got UNDRIP, the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People. We had the Truth and Reconciliation Committee all making recommendations that governments have said, yes, 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 we're going to try to live up to UNDRIP or TRC and all that. But they're not doing anything. And so it's taken these blockades and this resistance to get the attention. Now, whether or not the politicians and corporations are going to do anything about it is the next question. And that's why, you know, the Wet'suwet'en leaders have been saying, look, you know, we know this is an inconvenience, but we have certain conditions. Get the RCMP, tell them to back off. Get the hell out of here. We're not armed. This isn't, an armed revolt. So why are you coming at us like we're going to war? And let's begin some serious negotiations. And that means that the prime minister should be there and show us that he takes this very seriously. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, it will be very interesting to see how the government approaches this in the next weeks, because it's going to set a precedent for how the relations are going to go between the government and Indigenous groups, right?
Yep.
Can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
What do you hope for your grandchildren when they get to be your age? Going back to the aging well conversation.
I hope that they have a future. I hope that there is a world that is still rich enough to give them the kind of young experience in their young lives that I had in mine. And everything the scientists are telling us now is that we're heading for a very, very uncertain future. And that indeed, as Greta Thunberg is saying, why should I go to school? I don't even have a future. If what the scientists say is true, you're not doing anything to avoid a catastrophic climate chaos. You're not doing anything, so I don't have a future. Well, I hope that my grandchildren have a future. I'm doing whatever I can to try to make a difference. But we need some big changes very, very quickly.
Awesome. Thank you so much, David, for your time.
Good talking to you.
You as well.
I hope all your listeners watch the show.
Yes, they will.
Thanks a lot. Talk to you again.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Truth Be Told podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Orr. Special thanks to David Suzuki for being a guest on this episode, and to Amelia Scher and Tyler Bogart for helping produce this episode. You can listen to us at SheridanLifeRadio.ca or on Spotify.